Welcome to Season 8 of the Aomi Talks podcast. I'm your host, David Petro. It's hard to believe we've done 7 years of featuring speakers from the Aomi conferences, and this season is no different. We'll be hearing from the voices of a selection of speakers from this past Aomi 2025 conference in May. And this season, we're going to hear about executive function, math therapy, neurodivergence, and indigenous ways of knowing, all in the context of mathematics. But first, we're going to be hearing from Jamie Mitchell, whose webinar is on hacking assessment in the age of AI. He's going to give us a bit of a preview of his September 10th webinar today, which is freely available to all teachers. So let's get right to it. Okay, so I'm talking with Jamie Mitchell. Jamie, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Jamie, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you connect yourself to math?
Yeah, I mean, I've been teaching math now. I think I'm pushing very close to my 20th year. I don't think I've reached that particular milestone yet, but I know I'm very close. When I was younger, I studied software engineering in university and had all the dreams in my youth of becoming a video game programmer. But as I sat there in the basement of the library of McMaster, you know, studying, I was like, this life isn't for me. And what I realized was how much I enjoyed in my little study group that I had teaching people and telling people about the mathematics that I knew. And so I think that kind of realization really got me thinking about teaching. And my first job as a teacher at a teacher's college, I was working at this alternative high school for kids that had been suspended or expelled or were trying to get back into high school. And I was the math teacher, and I on paper was teaching every single math class that you could teach in high school, because the 20 kids that I had were all in different places. And that was a challenging experience, as like, for me, coming out of engineering and getting this place where there's a bunch of kids that had life experiences that I'd never had. But I think that made me a better teacher, and I then dove into more traditional settings after that. And I've been teaching math ever since. I've been a department head. I've opened up a new high school. I, for a time, ran the innovation portfolio in my school board. And most recently, I guess, in my last teaching gig, I was running a 4-year integrated STEM program at the school I was at. So I've been all over the place, and everything just keeps bringing me back to math.
You know, that's interesting. I kind of had a similar start to my teaching career, where I was doing my master's degree in physics. And, you know, certainly I had the PhD path, but I enjoyed the teaching of the first and second year labs so much more that I switched to teacher's college instead. So totally get that.
I mean, I have the distinct memory at McMaster University in probably 2003, working in this study room and for the first time ever writing on a whiteboard in this study room, doing solutions to problems, and just like feeling how cool that was and wanting to harness that and do that as a career.
And so which board are you working out of right now?
Right now I'm with the Halton District School Board.
Okay. And, you know, we always try to promote Aomi here. And so I'm curious how you first got involved with or heard of Aomi along the way here.
Well, one of the high schools that I was teaching at had a science department that was always going to STAO, the Science Teachers Conference. And they were always talking about how much fun it was. And, you know, as a young teacher at the time, I had never heard of anything similar for math. And then, you know, a year or two later, when I opened up the high school that I was working with and had a bunch of newer math teachers that were like so eager to try new things, I came across Aomi probably because Dan Meyer was speaking. And, you know, being part of the generation that, you know, cut our teaching teeth on his math class needs a makeover video, we, you know, as a department, we decided we needed to go and we needed to see him. And I think that was in like North Toronto, if I'm remembering correctly. And that was my first Aomi conference. I snuck into one of Dan Meyer's like more private sessions to see what he was doing. I got to meet like a whole bunch of really cool people that before I had gone to Aomi, I had known of just through like Twitter. You know, back then Twitter was like a great space for teachers and math teachers, especially sharing ideas. And so there's just this like group of Ontario teachers that I knew of because they were posting their cool math lessons online that I got to meet. And I think from that first experience, that first OAME, years ago, I got really hooked by that, the energy that I feel when I'm at OAME. And I've been, with the exception of COVID, I think every year since.
And what, what was the catalyst that went took you from being just a participant at OME to a presenter?
The cynical answer is, when you're a presenter, you don't have to pay. When I'm recommending teachers who want to go to OAME but feel the financial pinch, I do recommend that they try and present something themselves. And I've done so many presentations now. I know that presenting your ideas to an audience, especially an audience of your peers, is a fantastic way to get better at the craft of teaching. I think at the time in my when I was doing my first presentation, I was working with a teacher and we were really trying to reimagine what Ontario's advanced functions course could look like. And so we had dipped into spiraling. It was a new idea to us and we really wanted to share how we approach spiraling advanced functions. And we threw together a presentation on that and got a lot of great feedback, shared a lot of different ideas, came back to our school with like a more definitive plan about how we were going to tweak our course in the following years. And, like I said, I've been advocating for people that I work with to present at OAME ever since, because that's how we get better.
Yeah, I totally get the idea of, when you present, it really forces you to sort of hone what you're saying and what you're thinking because you're presenting it out to the ether there. Although I kind of see that as a little bit of an antithesis when I read your title, Hacking Assessment in the AI Age. That doesn't sound like honing. That sounds a little bit like the backdoor stuff there. But that's what you're going to be talking with us about at our OME Talk session September 10th. So I'm wondering if you could tell us about hacking assessment in the AI age, what we're going to be hearing about.
Just backing it up a little bit for me, I think in my career I've always been looking at ways to hack assessment prior to AI. So for me, I've always really thought about that pinnacle of assessment for a math teacher, which is that one period timed math test. And is there still value in that today? I mean, that's a totally different conversation, but I've always found with the students that I've worked with, there's more value in having conversations with them. So I've always been trying to hack my own assessments. But with respect to hacking assessment in the age of AI, AI is a game changer for so many different fields in so many different ways. And I know teachers that are potentially listening to this or coming to the session. I've probably struggled with students that are using AI to do things dishonestly, to circumvent the traditional pathway of learning something. We as teachers need to really reimagine and reinvent what we are assessing, what we're valuing when we're, assigning grades to students. If the product is the only thing that matters to us, that end product, the thing that students are going to submit that may or may not be a polished piece of work, if that end product is all that matters, then AI is going to demolish everything we do with students because they'll be able to hijack the learning process just by utilizing the different tools that are coming along. What I think we need to be doing is thinking about how we can look at the journey that a student is taking from the first day that they enter our classroom to the day that they leave, and building almost a portfolio of their artifacts of learning. Sometimes it might be a test, sometimes it might be a picture that the teacher takes of a whiteboard that the student was working on where they did something really insightful. Sometimes it might be, a teacher jotting down some notes because they watched a student solve a problem in an elegant way. It doesn't always have to be that, one period we're shutting down the learning today because we're going to do an assessment, and AI can help us do that. AI doesn't always have to be viewed as like a tool for bad.
It sounds like your session is less about AI and more about rethinking what assessment should be.
I mean, I yes, and I could spend some time showcasing AI tools. What I found, like my past year for my school board, was very much engaged in a lot of training for teachers for how to use AI. And the first session we did back last November was very much like, these are the basics. This is ChatGPT. This is how you use it. And by the time we got to the spring, we had found that people were like really comfortable with AI tools and like ready to go to the next level. So, I mean, things advance so fast. I worry that the presentation that I gave in at OAME about hacking assessment in the age of AI is almost out of date. So, I need to do my own thinking about how to tweak it, but I definitely think it is fair to say I would spend more time discussing how to change assessment in a math class, and AI would be the lens that I'm going to do it through. That was like a really roundabout way to answer your question, David.
No, I think that kind of is sort of where I'm seeing it, and I think what you said last is really kind of almost the fundamental mode when we talk about AI, in that the AI that we have today is the worst AI we will ever have.
Yes.
It's just going to keep getting. And I'm going to say better in quotes, because there are definitely people who have want us to pump the brakes a bit. But I think if we don't try to leverage these tools, what you said at the very beginning about students circumventing what we're doing in class by using AI is really going to become the norm.
I think most math teachers that have used AI to solve a math problem recognize that it's not the best at math. And we know that because we have such deep subject expertise when it comes to mathematics. And I think our colleagues who are facing more of a battle with AI, English teachers, history teachers, who see students using it to write entire papers, also know how bad it can be at writing. And their job, and it's a lot of heavy lifting, is to convince students that the actual act of writing is worthwhile, in the same way that math teachers have to convince students that the act of doing math is worthwhile. And I think those of us who have dove into building thinking classrooms have found a way to convince students that engaging in mathematical play exploration is a worthwhile thing to do. I don't think you see kids going to phys ed class and using ChatGPT to figure out how to play a sport. Like, that's just not happening, because by and large, I may be painting students with a broad brush here, but by and large, students are engaged in a class like phys ed. So, part of our challenge as teachers of subject areas where perhaps in the past things have been more passive on the end of students is to show students that there is value in doing the thing.
That I think, I mean, that's the age-old challenge in a math class.
Yes.
And maybe it's just become more to the forefront now that we have these tools that are looming in the background.
Yeah. Well, like, I'm just spitballing here, thinking off the top of my head, but when I was in high school, we had Cole's notes for the books we were reading in English class. Right. And then, we had the internet. Students have had Wikipedia. You could go rent the movie based on the book. And ChatGPT is just leveling that kind of stuff up. And it's doing it in a way that's way faster than teachers can compete with sometimes. My advice to a lot of the teachers I've worked with is, allow students to use AI, give them permission to use it, and model how they could use it for good. Teach them that skill, and expect that when you get a product handed in, students have used AI on it, and ask them to show you what they've done. Because I guarantee when students do that, and when they're engaged in thinking about the output, rather than just copying and pasting the output, they will see, oh, this tool is okay for this task, and it's really bad for this task. And they will start to learn ways to be more efficient with their use, more honest with their use. just like when I was in school and I had to, learn how to use the internet as a research source. It's a skill we all need to learn.
So, can you give like a concrete example of, where you have, quote, hacked assessment with AI?
No.
And understanding we're just audio here.
I haven't. Maybe I have. I would have to do some deep thinking about it. I know places where I've hacked assessment without AI when AI was around, right? Like 2022, November 2022 is when ChatGPT really launched. And I was in a classroom at the time. Students were using it to write their university scholarship application letters. They were definitely using it for schoolwork. And I decided I wanted to explore that. And so, teaching a calculus class, I asked ChatGPT five different standard, calculus optimization problems. And I just took its output, copied and pasted into a document, came to class the next day, gave the students the document, told them I was using ChatGPT to answer questions. And then I had them, over the course of the period, critique the solutions and hand in their critique as their assessment for the optimization unit in calculus. And there was like, you could feel the like excitement in the room as students were doing this because they felt like they were doing something they weren't allowed to do, right? Like I'm giving them permission to use AI in a different way. It felt novel, it felt unique. And they were like really engaged in the task because they wanted to prove AI wrong. Some other ways, like in my job now, I'm not necessarily in the classroom. I'm like a math consultant for Halton, and I work in all sorts of high schools with all sorts of different teachers in different subject areas. So I've done some cool things helping teachers use AI in their classes. Worked with an English teacher and an art teacher. The English teacher had taken her class to see the art teacher's classes work. Their photography assignments that they were working on. And the English students had to write up a description of the picture, and they had to be as descriptive as they could be. And the experiment we tried was taking the students' writing, asking AI to make a picture based on the writing, and then comparing the original, the text, and the AI output to see how close they were. And through that exercise, students really got to see how important the language that they were using to describe like an image was when it came to recreating that image.
It sounds like a lot of your focus is more around how to create assessments that, AI doesn't necessarily know what to do with.
Yes. Last year I got introduced to Notebook LM, which is a cool Google product that it's like a little bit safer than like ChatGPT or Gemini in that you can share specific documents with Notebook LM, and when you ask it questions, they will only pull information from those documents. So the chance of you getting junk information, it goes down quite a bit. But the cool thing, or one of the cool things about Notebook LM is that you can actually have it generate a podcast based on the information you give it. So, like, I use it myself when I drive to work. If there's an article that I've been trying to read and I just haven't had a chance, I quickly turn it into a podcast and I listen to it on my way to work. And I've been enjoying that. But just because I like to play and I'm curious, I had ChatGPT generate a random 10-page document of ones and zeros. And then I shared that document with Notebook LM to make a podcast just to see what would happen. And they ended up creating a 5-minute podcast about randomness and how randomness can appear in some time, in some ways not random, in some ways very random. I just thought it was an interesting output from the AI. Like I would never have predicted that.
Yeah, having played around with Notebook LM, I can't get over how chipper the hosts are. But yeah, definitely an interesting, it is an interesting tool. I've definitely had some fun with it as well. Okay, so we don't want to necessarily give away your whole session. We want people to come out to the virtual session you're doing on the 10th. So thanks, Jamie, for giving us a little bit of a glimpse about what we're going to be hearing you talk about on that night. And thanks for coming to talk to us about it.
I appreciate you having me. Looking forward to it.
That was Jamie Mitchell giving us a glimpse of what he will be talking about on our September 10th webinar. This webinar is free to anyone interested, and registration can be found at talks.oime.on.ca, on our MCIS website, or in the link in the podcast description. Next month, we'll be talking to Chad Harris, where he will be talking about his session titled, Wait, What Was I Learning? Shedding light on neurodivergent experiences in the classroom. So stay tuned for that, and in the meantime, stay safe.